Right. It is the City of Melbourne Council meeting number 48 on Tuesday, 10 December 2019, and it's 5:30 p.m. We're opening the meeting. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance this evening. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Today, excuse me, we are proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and the audio will be made available on the City of Melbourne website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team at the end of the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned off or turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. Thank you, everyone. The agenda this evening comprises one report from committee, nine reports from management, two of which are confidential, and four items of general business. We have one apology this evening from Councillor Cathy Oak. Councillors, if anyone has either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by Council, please disclose the type and nature of that interest prior to the consideration of the relevant item. Thank you. Thank you, I'm right. Thank you. Confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting open minutes of council meeting number 47, held on Tuesday, 26 November 2019. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, and seconded by Councillor Riley. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you, councillors. It's not the plane trees. That was passed unanimously. Thank you very much. I declare the motion carried. Councillors, are there any items arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss at this point? Good. Thank you very much. There are none. So that brings us to submissions and correspondence. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code. In relation to Agenda Item 5.1, proposed road discontinuance of part of Franklin Street and part of Queen Street, Melbourne, items of correspondence have been received from Bob Evans, Lawrence Petrozelli, Chris Butler, C.G. Hughes, Pamela Dale, David Leggy, Mary Lou Howie, President, Friends of Queen Victoria Market, Anna Petrozelli, Jeffrey Love, Cheryl McKinna, Richard Grace, Anna Panettiere, Philip Runcival, Bernadette O'Connor, Patricia Nee Ivor, Helen Hooper, Mary Drost, Margot Burrows, Paul Cheradichenko, Elizabeth Bodsworth, M. Laurie, Dr. Miriam Fain, Secretary, Friends of Queen Victoria Market, Marissa Wilkins, Gab Preto, Catherine Greening, Ralph Domino, Anne Horrigan-Dixon, Catherine Toe, Stephen Hatcher, and Anna C. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal, community engagement on future uses and activities for Market Square, we've had an item of correspondence from Mary Lou Howie and C.G. Hughes. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, 2020 City of Melbourne Business Mission, China and Japan, we've had an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. Councillors, Does anybody wish to discuss the confidential status of any of the confidential items on the agenda this evening? No, thank you very much. Reports from committee. There's one report from committee for consideration in the open session. It's item 5.1, proposed road discontinuance of part of Franklin Street and part of Queen Street, Melbourne. Councillors, we're going to call on Jo Wandell to give us a presentation on this item. Jo, over to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. We'll just take a moment to load the presentation. But the purpose of the report before you this evening is to recommend the discontinuance of parts of Franklin Street and Queen Streets. It is a part of the submission section 223 committee considerations under the Local Government Act. Thank you. Next slide. Just to remind councillors and members of the public of the subject area, so we are talking about Franklin Street, which is to the south of the Queen Victoria Market, and also that part of Queen Street, which is adjacent to the current at-grade market car park. We are not talking about that part of Queen Street, which is to the north, between what we would call the upper and lower parts of Queen Victoria Market. Thank you. In terms of the journey so far, the proposed road discontinuance has always formed a process that was needed to be conducted to create the freehold title for the future southern development site. This southern development site is part of an agreement between the State Government of Victoria and the City of Melbourne. It has been contemplated since 2014. It has been identified as a key move, an objective of, within the master plan and also the implementation framework, and in 2017 was informed again in the updated business case. In 2015 and 16, there was a planning process, Amendment C245, which commenced to provide the planning framework for the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program, and that ultimately led to gazettal of Amendment C245 by the Minister for Planning in 2017. At this time, the Melbourne planning scheme did change to remove the requirement for the QVM program to deliver what was known as New Franklin Street, to deliver a shared zone between the current at-grade market and the Franklin Street stores. And that is the process which has brought us to where we are today. Thank you. Next slide. Here is an aerial shot which shows the proposed parcels to be discontinued. So we are talking about Parcel A, which would create the ultimate freehold title for the Southern Development site, and also Parcel B, which in the master plan is where a proposed future Queen's Corner building would go. Thank you. As I've mentioned, the Melbourne Planning Scheme already defines this land parcel, and it was through this process that the new Franklin Street was set aside and designated as a shared zone to prioritise pedestrian and bicycle movements through this area. Thank you. Next slide, thanks. The proposed road discontinuance has been the subject of a public notice, which commenced in September and concluded in October. There have been a number of submissions hearings conducted by the submissions committee, and this culminated in the report before you, which has recommended the discontinuance of parts of Franklin and Queen Street, subject to a number of conditions. Thank you. This slide shows the allocation or designation of roads. You can see that the roads in green are actually arterial roads under the control of VicRoads, and the roads in yellow are government roads. Thank you. People will be familiar with the areas that we're talking about. As part of the master plan, it's always been envisaged that this roundabout on the corner of Queen and Franklin Street would be removed and replaced with a signalised intersection to improve public safety around this area. Thank you. There has been an accompanying traffic report prepared by Cardno, an independent study that is accompanying the council report this evening, This slide shows the current vehicle movements in the red hashed line and the future proposed vehicle movements in the blue straight line. It is proposed, given the creation of the Southern Development Site, that vehicles approaching from the north would continue on past the market to Beckett Street, where they would then turn left and come back up Queen Street to either park at the new market car park at Munro, which is providing 500 cars for Queen Victoria Market, and also through a left-turn road at Franklin Street, park at the future Southern Development Site, which is proposed to provide up to 500 cars for the market. The CIDRA analysis undertaken does confirm that discontinuing the road will not have that the road will actually sorry that the precinct traffic conditions will operate satisfactorily with the discontinuance of the road. The report before you this evening does talk about conditions, however, and one of the conditions is that the City of Melbourne must take on board the recommendations in that Cardinaux report, which does talk about potential changes in lane configurations, monitoring traffic, phased traffic lights to reflect real-time traffic flows in the area, and also changes to lane configurations. Thank you. I think we'll leave that there. Thanks very much, Kate. Thank you.
Thank you, Jo. Councillors, were there any questions for Jo as a Councillor Lippitt?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just a question of clarification, and thank you very much, Jo, for the presentation. Can I just confirm that by agreeing to the discontinuance of areas A and B today, that doesn't preclude Council in future from determining that the remaining stretch, the remaining carriageway of Franklin Street between Queen and William Street, could be either one directional or two directional? Thank you.
Through you, Lord Mayor. That is correct, Councillor. There is nothing in the decision before you this evening which would preclude you from further considerations in respect to traffic controls around that area.
Thank you.
Councillor Rees.
And just to get even further clarity on that point, because it is very important, when you say that a decision tonight doesn't preclude the future decisions around traffic movements along Franklin Street, do you see it being possible with what's being proposed this evening that that at a future point in time the council can make a decision about traffic going both east and west, two-way traffic along Franklin Street?
Thank you. Through you, Lord Mayor. Yes, I can confirm that that is the case. The westbound Franklin Street road at the moment is two lanes in one direction. There is no reason that those lanes, subject to further traffic analysis and technical support, could not be converted to one way each way.
Councillor Riley.
Joe, just to clarify, if this proposal does go forward, when would this be activated?
Through you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor, for your question. So what we're seeking tonight is the proposed discontinuance of these roads. This is to allow us to move forward with the creation of the freehold title of the Southern Development Site. It's always been envisaged that this would be a mixed-use parcel that, like Munro, we would go through an expression of interest and request for proposal process to appoint a developer for that parcel of land. Subject to this evening's resolution, it would be our intent to commence an expression of interest process in early 2020. It would be our intent to have the freehold title created by June 2020 and to then commence a request for proposal process with the development market. It is anticipated, based on what we know from the Munro development, that a planning approval process would take some 12 months for the Southern Development Site. The Minister for Planning is the responsible authority for that site, and hence it would not be anticipated that gazettal of the road closure and then the active road closure would occur before the end of 2021 into 2022.
councillors? No other questions? Oh, sorry, Councillor Pender.
Just one question, Lord Mayor, to Joe. Joe, I might have missed something, but consultation with residents, how much of that took place in relation to the Cardinal report?
Thank you, Councillor. Through you, Lord Mayor. As mentioned, this was part of a submission section 223 committee process. There was a public notice which was released in The Age on the 19th of September. On the 19th of September, the Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal Program hosted a engagement session directly with adjoining residents, specific adjoining residents in the Melbourne Terraces building. The public notice period was open until the 14th of October, and members of the public had the opportunity to present at the submissions hearing also.
Councillors, no other questions? All right. I'm going to look for someone to move this motion.
Lord Mayor, can I move the motion with, if you're happy for me to? I think it's a major project. I'm happy to move or second, but with the inclusion of a new paragraph around 4.1.3 relating to investigating options to configure Franklin Street west of Queen Street as a two-way carriageway.
Which we can see on the screen. Yep, so that is the motion we're considering, and I am happy to move the motion, and I'm looking for someone to second.
In which case, would you mind if I second it? Thank you. Oh, sorry, sorry, Councillor.
Councillor Leppett is seconding it. Good. All right, well, we can see the motion. It's an extensive motion after significant process in terms of, as we heard from Joe, Gazettal and a Section 223 committee, and the motion recommended by that committee is now before us in relation to discontinuance of parts of Franklin and Queen Streets. We know, as we saw from the presentation, councillors, that this has been a long process. It's been a complicated process in some regards, starting way back in 2014 in terms of agreements with state government on how a vision for the renewal of Queen Victoria Market could come together, which included at that time the contemplation of the discontinuance of this part of Franklin Street and Queen Streets to be able to fulfil that vision, both in terms of creating appropriate spaces and also creating the opportunity for the renewal, which is has a significant budget, to be properly funded so that it can be delivered by Council. We know that Council has a vision for Queen Victoria Market in terms of its renewal. It recognises the significance of this space and as a destination for both locals and visitors, as something that very much reflects our social and commercial history, but also has a very important part to play in our future. We also know that, can I just clarify for everybody in the gallery that tonight's a council meeting night. It's not a time for submissions from the public. We absolutely welcome you being here to listen to the debates that happen, but if you can't sit in the gallery respectfully to listen, then unfortunately we're going to have to ask you to leave. It's not something that we want to do, but that's what we will do, and we have already done that prior to the meeting starting. So if you could please keep that in mind. And it's a very difficult job for Brad, who's up there, but it's a job that he will fulfil on our behalf, because we need to be able to run this meeting properly. Thank you. We know that this is a very fast-growing neighbourhood in the city, that we have another 20,000 residents moving into this neighbourhood over the next 15 to 20 years. And that absolutely is part of the ongoing development and management of population growth in the city. We want to be able to set up and support what are called 20-minute suburbs, if you like, the sorts of neighbourhoods where people can access all of the services they might need as residents and workers within walking distance. And this particular precinct has so many of those elements in abundance, and we're continuing to deliver on that. We also know that the discontinuance of these parts of the streets are absolutely essential for the renewal itself in terms of the Southern Development Site and the Queen's Corner building, if that is something that we proceed with into the future. These parts of our overall vision are absolutely essential to the vibrancy and the commercial dynamics of the market going forward. We know that we have received a lot of submissions in relation to this item tonight. I think it was 21 at last count that I did. We know that as part of the 223 committee process, there were 36 submissions and six presenters on the topic. And all of us have had the opportunity to review those submissions, with the primary concern being the impact on local traffic. We had an opportunity, the CEO and I, to meet with a number of residents so that they could voice their concerns and also some of their ideas about this process. And I know that the CEO also did a walk around with some of our officers earlier this week so that they could view some of the current issues and hear more about the foreshadowed issues. The traffic report does note that there is increased pressure on Dudley and Peel, on the Dudley and Peel Street intersection, as well as the William and Franklin Street intersections, particularly during peak hours. And there's a lot of pressure on those roads now, and that will continue to be the case, given the way that traffic from the Westgate tunnel will flow into this neighbourhood into the future. Some of the aspects of the traffic management report also note that the increased pressure will, to some extent, be offset by other benefits, such as improved safety through the signalisation of the Dudley Street roundabout, improvements for trams and buses that service that area as a result of works, as well as better connectivity for pedestrians and cyclists, particularly at that part at the moment, which is the left-hand turn into Franklin Street. As I said, we know that we've got more people moving into this area. We are looking to improve all of those connections, and signalisation should make a big difference to that. I also acknowledge that, and pleasingly, I'm going to actually point out the submission made by Bob Evans, where the tone and nature of that submission was to suggest a number of solutions. We know that in the ongoing work, and you can see from the recommendation here this evening, that it is subject to management implementing the recommendations in the traffic impact assessment, and as noted by Councillor Leppett, and I'll let him talk to that as well, investigating other options that we can also make sure that the solutions that have been presented in many of the submissions, and I use Bob Evans as a good example of that, can also be incorporated into those traffic flow considerations as we move forward. But this is an important part of the Queen Victoria Market precinct renewal as contemplated from 2014 to now in December 2019. This is a critical part of the renewal for so many reasons, and with due consideration being given to those traffic flows as we move forward, then I, for all of those reasons, I'm happy to support this motion and move this motion this evening. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I agree. I just want to contextualise the decision we're making here today, because the nature of the submissions that we've been receiving over the weekend, yesterday and this morning, might suggest that this is a first principles decision as to whether or not we should be discontinuing parts of the carriageway of Queen and Franklin Streets. That's not the case. The state government's expecting us to do this. Otherwise, the 2014 agreement contract with the state is unable to be fulfilled. The council's expecting us to do this based on the 2015 master plan, the 2016 initiated planning scheme amendment, which was gazetted in 2017,
with a new development plan overlay that requires a development to go over the top of the eastbound lanes of Franklin Street as they're currently configured. And of course, the earlier this year, the People's Panel's reports and the Council's resolution coming out of the People Panel reports around uses in different parts of the market precinct, including the Southern Development Site, all of these key decisions require an in-principle agreement to discontinue parts of the carriageway. Tonight, we're considering the end of the statutory process to actually give effect to that. And something very extraordinarily badly wrong would have needed to have happened in order for us not to agree to that. Of course, subject to all of the due diligence and all of the checking with local business owners, and I do note that a letter was sent to the owners of all abutting properties, that their interests are being considered, respected, and where necessary, resulting in change to the way we're approaching this question. Wherever possible. It's why we're not considering submissions afresh today. It's why we set up a submissions committee, and I thank the members of that committee for not just considering this on a yes-no basis, but also considering the full report from the consultants and coming to us with a recommendation that has a lot of conditions attached to it about how to make the absolute most out of the local road network, traffic flows, and so on. But I did just want to contextualise this debate by saying this isn't a first principles decision. In fact, this just enables those decisions that have undergone consultation with tens of thousands of people in previous years around how we're going to pull off a Queen Victoria Market renewal. That includes how we create a freehold site at the southern end of the market in order to pay for other aspects of that renewal. But getting to the detail of the proposal before us and the statutory consideration whether or not to discontinue parts of Queen and Franklin Street, there hasn't been a huge amount of... there's been various concerns, but one of the biggest themes that's come through is traffic trying to access the new car park in Munro or the Southern Development Site from the north or the northwest or the west. Will they be needing to drive a lot further all the way down around the Beckett Street in order to get back onto Queen Street, and what will that do to the local traffic network? Now, I accept, because I'm not a traffic engineer, but we engage traffic engineers to answer this question for us, that the local road network will be able to cope satisfactorily based on the proposal that we had in our master plan, based on the proposal we have in our DPO in the planning scheme. But, as I questioned earlier, our decision today doesn't preclude us in future from determining that that section of Franklin Street between Queen and William Streets could be two-way in future. Currently, the carriageway, the area of the road that will remain open is currently only used as westbound traffic, but it is wide enough to take eastbound and westbound traffic if there's no parking there or whatever other arrangements we can come up with. Tonight's not the night that we're making that decision. I just wanted to make it very, very clear that we're not precluding Council from making that decision in future. Tonight's about giving effect, in a statutory sense, to those decisions that have been made on an in-principle basis over the course of the last 6 years consistently to enable the redevelopment of the Queen Victoria Market. So I understand why there are some submitters here who have latched on to the idea that if the discontinuance doesn't happen, then the whole deal is off. And therefore, this is a proxy for a much, much, much larger question about whether or not Queen Victoria Market renewal should happen or not. But tonight isn't about that. That debate has certainly been had before. Tonight is about the narrow consideration of whether or not the statutory process has run its course. There have been no procedural defects along the way, and so we should be supporting the recommendation before us. And I've made that suggestion of an additional paragraph around investigating Franklin Street being two-way carriageway between Queen and William in future. But the motion should be supported. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Councillors, would anybody else like to speak to this motion? Councillor Watts.
Thank you. Yes, I would. I'd like to note the disquiet once again expressed by stakeholders. It suggests to me that we have to lift our game as a council, because people are here with, I think, perhaps not quite understanding what this motion is, and my colleagues have already spoken at length about it being part of the discontinuation being a part of a longer administrative journey, a process to do with creating freehold title to the southern site, which in turn it needs to be acquired by the City of Melbourne to pay for the QVM renewal, which in turn has changed time and time again. And I expect, in response to some of the concerns that are so often expressed, will change again as time goes by. Because the time frame we're looking at for this seems to be 2022. I mean, these things are very difficult for many in the community to understand. They are very difficult for me to understand, this procedural matters which underpin things that the stakeholders just experience in their own world and in their with their own eyes. They understand, I think, or fear the gridlock that might occur, and that's their response to what they're seeing here. It's not saying that the gridlock will occur, it's just that people really fear that that's going to happen. And we all know that the management of traffic in this city, there is an agenda, I suppose, in us all, because we're all living with this congestion. But creation of a gridlock is not something we want to do. So we have to do better. We have to actually find solutions, and I'm really pleased that some of our constituents are reflecting on this and putting solutions forward, and the onus is on us to actually accept what they're saying in good faith and do something about it. We have employed traffic consultants. It very much depends on a specialist expertise to work on signalling and all sorts of other amelioration methods. And I can only hope that that happens in the next while, because it's not something that I personally am happy with, that so much anxiety is caused in this city when we try to do what has been agreed by council since 2014. I personally am not fussed that the state government may not like what we're doing. We have a responsibility to our people. And the state government has changed a number of times too. So my sense of all of this is that we are still in a situation where changes for the better can still occur, which is why I'm very thrilled to have 4.1.3 in there, because we are investigating options. But we do need the money that will be generated by our ownership of the southern site, one would hope. And so I am reassured that a better outcome than is anticipated by our constituents who've expressed their concern will occur in the next few years. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Councillors, councillories?
thanks, Lord Mayor. Can I begin by acknowledging all the people who took the trouble to make submissions this evening? Mary Lou Howie, John, all the good folks at the Friends of Queen Victoria Market, all the traders and many other residents who are affected by matters that we're discussing this evening. I think Councillor Leppett has made a very good point about we need to be careful that this evening's discussion doesn't become a proxy for other decisions which have actually been made previously or decisions which are going to be made at some point in the future. This evening, what we are doing is giving practical effect to decisions that have been previously decided. The important point I guess I wanted to make was traffic and transport ain't great at the Queen Victoria Market at the moment. In fact, if truth be known, it's a nightmare. If somebody travels to the market all the time, often going around that Dudley Street roundabout, you take your life in your hands. If you're a pedestrian or cyclist trying to get to the Queen Victoria Market, it's not exactly inviting. In fact, it's positively dangerous. So I think Cardno have been engaged, the traffic engineers. There is actually some science to what we're discussing here this evening, and I actually think they've done quite a good job in designing some new intersections through this part of the city, which I think will come, certainly with time, to be welcomed as an improvement to transport flows through this part of the city. I think this will, what's being proposed for the Dudley Street roundabout is a very significant improvement. I think what's being proposed at the Queen Street roundabout is a very significant improvement. Subject to evidence telling me to the contrary, but I'm not expecting, I think that if we can get assurances around eastbound and westbound traffic along Franklin Street, I think that will help with traffic flows through that part of the city. And I think what's being proposed this evening would go a long way to helping improve pedestrian and cycling transport through this part of the city. So I, as a councillor, am happy to flag my intention to support the motion before us.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Councillors, are there any other speakers to this motion? No. Okay. Then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. So I declare that motion carried. That concludes reports from committee to be considered in open session this evening. There are 7 reports from management for consideration in the open session. The first one of those is the records of assemblies of councillors. Councillors, would you like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Riley, thank you. A councillor to second the motion. Councillor Pinder, thank you. Councillor Riley, would you like to speak to the motion? Councillor Pinder? No. Then I'm going to put the motion to the... Oh, anybody else want to speak to this motion? I must ask. No. Although all those in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous, so I declare the motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Item 6.2 is publishing tender recommendations. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. Then I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you, and a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Lippitt, over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. So thanking officers for this process in working through. Obviously, this council strives for the highest levels of transparency. We do that in terms of our current practice, considering tender reports in open session. But there are times where there perhaps is a single tenderer, or perhaps where organisations have the capacity to follow these tender reports and potentially use that to corner market pricing. So rightfully, what we have is the balance between finance and governance. We're charged with both of those responsibilities, in fact, under the Act. And so we should always check in to see that there's not unintended consequences happening with any policy that we've endorsed. And I'm pleased to say that after some detailed research from our officers and looking at what other councils do in terms of their tender policies, that we've arrived at exactly the same policy that we've been implementing previously.
Councillor Lippitt, would you like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I agree. I have very little to add other than that there's no perfect solution here. Balancing the demands of our community's expectations around transparency and our ability to drive a hard bargain and ensure that every single cent of our ratepayers' funds is being spent as efficiently as possible. You can always draw the line somewhere and compromise one or the other. There's no perfect solution. I'm not sure if my procedural motion in October to defer it till November has ended up killing this. I just wanted to thank officers for helping all of us have what is actually a really important discussion, which is how we balance these competing interests. This isn't something that's hard and fast for the next few decades. We will always need to consider whether or not we've got the balance right. And I wish our CEO every piece of good luck in this, because after all, it is his delegated power under the Local Government Act as to whether or not something comes to open or closed. So, public, it's all his fault.
He's up for it. Councillors, would anybody else like to speak to this motion? Councillor Pinder.
I'd just like to say I have every confidence in our CEO's judgment.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. Any other speakers? Councillor Liu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And I also want to echo my sentiment as well. And you know, for me, transparency versus best value. And for me, that's always going to be the key, because what is delivering the best value in terms of the benefits and also the dollar amount for the people of Melbourne is always crucial. And I think I've always, you know, when I first came in, when we, when I actually saw that we actually have a lot of the tenders out in open session, that was a bit of a surprise to me coming from the corporate world, because we would, that's something that would never actually advertise. But I do note that there are some things that we want to be transparent, but ultimately it is best value, because that's what we should be aiming for.
Thank you, Councillor Leloux. Any other speakers to the motion? Oh, Deputy Lord Mayor. I was just going to say transparency is a priority, and I know that we'll continue to work through these items to make sure that that's always the case. But to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I think it's just important to note too that what we're talking about here is a policy which actually elevated the transparency measures before us, because all of our tender results are published quarterly as, on top of this transparency measure. So I think we've got the balance absolutely right.
Good. If there are one more speaker. No? Oh, you were getting ready for the next one. Would everybody in favour, I'm putting the motion to the vote, everyone in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous, so I declare the motion carried. Thank you. This brings us to item 6.3 on the agenda this evening, which is Queen Victoria Market Precinct Renewal, Community Engagement on Future Uses and Activities for Market Square. Councillors, would we like a presentation on this item? Yes, yes. Joe Wandell, over to you for a presentation on this item. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. The paper before you is in respect to the development of a charter for Market Square, which is the current at-grade car park at Queen Victoria Market. At the September Future Melbourne Committee meeting, Council asked management to commence a public engagement process to develop a charter for Market Square to confirm the purpose, objectives and function of this new public space for Melbourne. In order to develop a charter, we embarked upon a public engagement process during October, so from 14th of October to the 1st of November of this year. This was through the City of Melbourne's Participate Melbourne process. More than 7,000 leaflets were distributed to adjoining residents, businesses and other groups within the area of the Queen Victoria Market, and dedicated information sessions were held at the City of Melbourne's Information Hub on a number of evenings and also weekends to talk to people, to encourage them to put forward their views on what should be encouraged and also discouraged in terms of future uses and activities at Market Square. There is a report that is before you this evening, which includes and summarises all of the outcomes of that October engagement process. And we are seeking your support this evening for the finalisation of a charter, which we would bring back to you in 2020. In terms of the key findings, the survey reinforced what we heard from members of the community through the three phases of community engagement that were undertaken to develop the master plan for the renewal program. More than 7,500 people took place during those engagement phases. This report, as I said, reinforced previously identified uses and activities for Market Square. And really there were three suggestions and themes which really had overwhelming support. Firstly, respondents viewed that respect for and fostering of Aboriginal voices and the connection to place was most important. So 81% of respondents to this survey reinforced the need to enhance Aboriginal connection to place at the market. This was followed by involving and celebrating Melbourne's diverse communities and also encouraging community and events, local community and events, and activities that supported inclusion, well-being and belonging, and providing a place for informal recreation, but being mindful as well of connecting those community events to the market activities. Informed by the findings of the community engagement process, it is proposed that we now move forward with the development of a charter for Market Square, which, as I said, we would bring back to Council in March for its consideration. Once a charter is finalised, management would then propose to issue a public expression of interest for the design of Market Square, of which a charter and a design brief will form key reference documents. The September FMC meeting also asked us to consider the integration of the Queen's Corner building with Market Square, and there were no findings throughout the survey process which would preclude the future development of that building. So, Lord Mayor and Councillors, we commend the report before you this evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Jo. Councillors, any questions for Jo Wandell? None. Okay. Then I'm going to move this motion and I'm looking for somebody to second the motion. Councillor Leppett? Good, thank you. I am speaking in support of the motion this evening. The motion before us is also an important next step to progress the delivery of the Queen Victoria Market renewal, which has always contemplated a new 1.5 hectare green public open space in the heart of our city. One of the core elements of the renewal program is to create high quality public open space where the current at-grade car park is located. As we all know, this area used to be Melbourne's first cemetery, constructed in 1837 and used until 1853. Now we know it is a hard and hot asphalted space for cars, one of the hottest places in our city. Council's intention is to return this area to open public space that's fit for recreation, leisure and relaxation. It should be a place that caters for market goers, for traders and for both the local and broader community. As we know, we want to return this to a place that is sensitive to its history and reflective of its past, but also is a very flexible space for use for future activities. We also know that in this city, with a fast-growing population, that it is very difficult to create new open public space and public open space or vice versa, and it's another reason why this is such an important development and investment in this area. I'd just like to address the fact that there is no doubt that I think the entire council acknowledges that the car park is something that is highly valued by traders, something that is seen, and friends of the Queen Victoria Market, both with a little F and a big F, something that we've received a lot of submissions on and has created a lot of discussion and debate. We know from the evidence of the data that we received, particularly around our transport strategy to 2030, that demand for car parking is actually reducing as modes of transport change. We know that we expect in this neighbourhood almost double the amount of population, and that we want to develop a market that's completely relevant to all of those residents and local workers to make sure that they are using that market, and that those residents, as residents have done for so many other venues and businesses around the city, become absolutely the heartbeat and the underlying platform for success for those businesses has come from residents. And so that is definitely part of the plan going forward. I note the suggestions about the fact that the People's Panel came back and reported that they wanted some of that, at least some of that at-grade car park, to continue to be available for parking. And there's the suggestion that this recommendation of the People's Panel has been ignored. It hasn't been ignored at all.
what we are acknowledging is that that space, one, is part of an agreement made with the state government in 2014 as absolutely critical and central to them agreeing to go forward with the renewal as it was. It hasn't been ignored because as part of the ongoing plans for the market, up to 1,000 spots have been identified adjacent to the market on the basis that we've absolutely listened and tried to find alternatives for that space, given that the current at-grade car park was already and has always been contemplated and planned to be a public open space, a magnificent public open space, which the charter will capture the uses. So I am reiterating that we have listened. We are mindful of our obligations and the key parts of the QVM renewal plan that are essential to now and into the future for the way that this neighbourhood works and the way that the market works, and that is why alternative car parking has been identified as a critical part of the renewal plans going forward, because that space is not available for car parking into the future, and that's the way the facts are in relation to this spot. Having said all of that, I think this is going to be a fantastic public open space. It's going to reflect what we've already seen from the survey work, and that is that the top three uses that came in, as Joe said, were respecting our Aboriginal traditional owners as the most important aspect for use of Market Square, that we have space to celebrate our multicultural communities, and we know how many festivals happen there in what is a relatively tiny space at the moment, very restricted there near the stage area on Queen Street. And we also know that it can be used for community events and recreation. Our public parks are for hearts and lungs of this city. They are for personal, physical, mental and emotional well-being. They drive so much of the way that we cool the city, that we manage stormwater impacts going forward and other climate mitigation activities. And they are also absolutely at the driver of what visitors to our city enjoy about this city, are our parks and gardens. And with the fastest growing population in Australia, being able to provide those open spaces as density in our city increases is absolutely vital. And this is a key part of us being able to deliver on all of those priorities whilst still having found alternatives for parking in our city. And the role of the City Council is to find ways of balancing all of those different interests and priorities in a way that reflects best outcomes for people today, but importantly also for the future. We will be using feedback from traders and the community in relation to the charter, and that charter will then guide the design work that happens into next year. For all of those reasons, I'm happy to move this motion, and I call on Councillor Leppert to speak to the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I completely agree. First of all, can I apologise to Councillor Rees? I did jump in to second the motion. He is the Deputy Chair of the Major Projects Portfolio. I think I forgot that when I did it, but this is something that I've proposed, and that's something I'm just so grateful to colleagues and to the administration for taking up. I really think that we do need to talk about the use and the governance of a space before we go out and design, for two reasons. One, this is one of the biggest central city parks or plazas being created by cities anywhere around the world. Which other cities are delivering new open space at this scale? And therefore, we need to have that public conversation and do it right. And I've lost my train of thought, so I'll come back to the second one later. But anyway, apologies to Councillor Rees. As you can hear, I am excited about this because we do have an unprecedented opportunity. This is a generational opportunity. When one thinks about the early years of Federation Square, the civic and cultural charter that guided the use of that space actually worked really, really well. The fact that Fed Square as a company let that charter fall out of vogue is also another very good lesson for us. What are we actually creating here?
Are we creating a binding document with our community, with the market, with the broader population of Melbourne? And what does that actually mean? What level of confidence are we imbuing with the community about what we want this space to be? So this is an incredibly important process. It is not a process like the one we considered at Agenda Item 5.1 that has a lot of strictures around it. These are big, open, contestable questions. What should the square be used for? Follow-on questions are going to be just as important. Who controls that space? Is it the City of Melbourne? Is it QVM Proprietary Limited? Is it an arrangement between the two? Is it a formal arrangement? Is it a memorandum of understanding? Is this an overflow event space, an overflow logistical space, an overflow sales space for the market? Or is this a space that in and of itself has its own cultural identity, its own space for cultural events? And so this conversation is just so important. So I wanted to give it that context because this isn't just about whether or not car parks will be there for 3 years or forever or will be disappearing tomorrow. They're not going to be doing that. This is a question about what the use of that space should be going forward. And that is a really exciting question for me. So I'm looking forward to the charter coming back in March 2020. And I wish our officers every luck in developing that charter in line with what I think is some really exciting early feedback from our community based on the consultation efforts we've made to date. I'm delighted, I'm almost surprised, but I'm delighted at what came out in the top three, the top five themes of feedback from our community about what this space should be used for. And translating that into a charter is going to be a really interesting and rare opportunity for the council to get something right. I just want to close by thanking Mary Lou Howie for attaching a letter from Robin Scott MP to her submission, which clarifies the state government's position. She suggests it's a contested position, but I don't think it is. I'll just quote from it. The agreement includes the state government agreement with the council, includes the development of a new public open space, replacing the 720 car spaces elsewhere in the market precinct. The commitments in the 2004 agreement remain in place. I can confirm that the replacement of the existing at-grade car park remains a key element of the council's plans to revitalise the market and has the government's support. That's the context we're working in. I'm really looking forward to a conversation, a public conversation over the next few months around what the use and governance of the new market square should be going forward. And that is in the context of what it's going to be once it becomes a plaza, not what it's going to be in the short term in terms of transport or not transport. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation over summer. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. Councillor Watts.
Thank you. This motion has troubled me greatly. But I'm pleased to say we have made some progress. But I'd just like to make a couple of points, first of all, about the survey, which seems to have been the basis of the charter to some extent. The reality is the survey did not offer as an option, did not elicit comment on the flexible use of the space. So that was a problem that I would have liked to have been avoided. And secondly, in relation to the government's approach, I've read the material and my reading of it is somewhat different to that of my colleagues on council. It is my definite understanding that, yes, the state government does support what the City of Melbourne is wanting for this space. So the key element is not what the state government wants. The key element is what the City of Melbourne wants for this space. And the City of Melbourne has spoken. The City of Melbourne wants, as recommended by the People's Panel, it wants us to consider parking not off-site, but on-site. Now, there are all sorts of ways in which that can be presented. And we have come up with some solutions, but not all of them, which is why I've included, and I am grateful for my colleagues' indulgence in 12.3 on this, because there is scope for us to move forward in a manner with the treatment and the uses of this market square that accommodates many, many of the concerns expressed time and time and time again by those who trade at the market and those who use the market. Now, it is a fraught space, but it is possible, and as my colleagues pointed out, it's a very large space. It is possible treated properly with design detail to accommodate multiple flexible use. There is nothing in the documentation leading up to this point which says that flexible use of this space is prohibited. That is my position. So I'm very happy to have this here. I do believe that we have to acknowledge, and it isn't often said, but one of our constituents did mention it, we have to acknowledge that with this whole movement around this particular square, the City of Melbourne is actually acquiring, in a certain way of thinking, an asset which was there initially, historically, to support trading and market operations. I can see my position is popular, but really what's important is whether my colleagues accept my particular take and reflect on what I'm saying about this. I believe in 12.3, that leaves the way open. Now, I want to just make mention, if I may, about the difficulty around the charter itself, the use of the term charter. My colleague understands, and I thank Councillor Leppard for his introducing the notion of a charter for this space, but I think it's caused quite a lot of angst in the community around what exactly can be done with this charter. So my understanding, and I correct me if I'm wrong, this charter simply canvasses opinion about what uses the open space might be used for, what can be done there. And it is possible, because it's such a large space, that much can be done there. And I hope that is the case. I hope my colleagues approach this with goodwill and in good faith, which is the way we approach the People's Panel. And sadly, one of the most key elements of the People's Panel recommendations was not handled as expected. So this is an opportunity, I hope, for us to move forward together on this use of this space for mutual benefit for traders, customers and the wider community. Obviously, we don't want an asphalt car park there. It is hot. All of that is the case. I believe with the right approach to the design, we can get a green space and we can get a flexible space. And I'm really looking forward to what comes next after this particular motion passes the councillors. I will support it.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Rees.
Thanks, Lord Mayor, and I'm conscious that there are a lot of people here tonight who are very interested in where this motion and vote finally ends. And look, I'm not going to sit here and roll out the tired old tropes about change being difficult and trade-offs being necessary and all of that. Equally, I'm not going to sit here and try and talk about cliches about, I don't know, the glorious leadership of the City of Melbourne in the face of some resistance. The truth is we're muddling forward here, as is often the case with community projects. It's hard, it's not always pretty, but the truth is I do think we are moving forward, and I think where we're ultimately going to get to here is going to be a good thing for the market, a good thing for the people who love the market and are friends of the market, and a good thing for traders and everyone who uses the market. I actually think that Market Square will be the jewel in the crown of the QVM redevelopment. I know there are people here tonight who won't agree with that, but I honestly, in my heart, think that will be the case, because it will mean that many more people will be able to go to the market, spend more time there, longer periods of time there, hopefully spend more money while they're there, and that will lead to a more vibrant market and a market which is enjoyed for longer by more people. As you have touched on, Lord Mayor, the proposal for the QVM redevelopment actually involves more car parking spaces than there are at the moment. More, not less. So again, that in some ways goes against it flies in the face of what many urban planners tell us. You know, there's a lot of pressure to try and reduce car parking spaces in new development proposals. But you know, we're supporting more car parking spaces being at QVM because we're anticipating a lot more people are going to go there, and they're going to spend a lot more time there, and they're going to spend a lot more money when they're there, and they're going to enjoy the market experience even more for longer, and that's going to be a positive thing. Can I just thank Councillor Leppett for his contribution around the charter? I think that's a very sensible suggestion. Ultimately, I think that will mean we get to a better outcome around Market Square. Can I also acknowledge Councillor Watts's contribution around the robust surfaces and paving treatment and the need for flexibility? That's something that I support as well. So I'm very happy to support this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Pinder?
I actually agree with Councillor Watts. However, I also have something further to add, and that is I'm concerned about the engagement process. When you look at 135 respondents and two submissions through a Participate Melbourne website, I do not think that that is sufficient, given that the number of visitors annually to Queen Victoria Market numbers 8.99 million. So I think it's flawed. And I believe, and I carry this theme all the way through, even through to a couple of other reports on tonight. However, and I also do feel that Councillor Watts is pointing us out that the report focuses on what uses can Market Square be put to. I just think wider consultation is required, and we have not listened sufficiently.
Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Riley.
I also would like to thank Councillor Watts for putting this forward. She did some heavy research over the weekend to gain my confidence because I've always been one that has said Market Square should be the green space, and that was going back many, many years. But I do understand our market is struggling, our traders are struggling, the community want decent access, and this is what we are looking forward to producing. The Queen Victoria Market and our Market Square will be, as Councillor Rees just said, I believe, a wonderful place for people to come and to be able to access the market, be able to have that green space, to be able to be part of a community. So, yes, we have to do a charter, and by working through that charter, I am sure we'll be able to inform and be part of the design brief to make sure that we do implement everything that we think and the community think that will make us a better place to go to the Queen Victoria Market.
Councillors, any other... Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. So I think we're talking a lot about the future of the market here, and we've been talking about that for many years now. I've got quite a bit of sympathy for people who have submitted to our various processes over the years. I do think we made a rod for our own back in opening up the conversation around the green space, which has always been part of the key deliverables of the reason that we're doing this renewal, because for me, the future of the market is actually the 20,000 residents who will call this part of the city home. The future of the market is people who are grabbing produce, regional produce from around the state and sitting in that green space and watching an event. So when we talk about sustainable business and business into the future, is providing that we're not losing car parks, providing that we're providing those 1,000 car parks, and obviously my wish was for them to be directly below the market, but we can't revisit that now. But providing those 1,000 car parks are there, the other critical thing that we have to balance is that this isn't just about the market. This is about City North. This is about an urban renewal area which will be home to 20,000 residents who we also represent. If you go out to Flagstaff Gardens on a warm day, you can't move already. So one of the things that we know is absolutely critical in a fast-growing city is green open space. So I'm very comfortable with the fact that we're providing the 1,000 car parks in the two development sites. I'm very comfortable with the fact that none of these car parks will be removed until those other car parks come online. But I also think that we shouldn't be disingenuous in the fact that delivery of this key open space has been an absolute cornerstone for this project since its very beginning. So I've got some sympathy for our submitters that have submitted throughout this process, but we need to be absolutely honest and upfront that yes, this is about the long-term sustainability of the market, but it's also about renewal of a key part of our city for all to enjoy into the future, and ultimately about shoring up the long-term business model, which won't be in a city of 10 million people being able to drive to a market and load up their boot. It's just not going to happen to have cars in a central city of 10 million people.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Yes, I am. Well, there's a lot of history, and I mean, thank you tonight for those that have made that clear. I think the thing that I would reflect on from the transport strategy is that one of the things I've learned, and I didn't know much about transport when I started, but one of the things I've learned is that we think, as shoppers, that cars are more important than they are. And every single bit of evidence that I've looked at from around the world actually shows that the fears that we have about losing parking, which in fact we won't in this case, because we have set aside an increase of about 50% more of the cars that we've got there at the moment. So there's an availability, at least within our planning, to increase parking if that's what we choose in the future. But certainly all the evidence says that inner city or strip shopping, if you want those things to work, what you actually have to do is to make moving around by foot really accessible and really available. And actually what we're doing here is creating a space in the city where more people will be adjacent to and visiting the market and walking. And as such, they will learn that the market's there. They will then visit the market maybe for the first time and understand the produce that's there, what's available there, how exciting that space is, as well as the arguments that the Deputy Lord Mayor made about that increase of those people that will be able to literally walk downstairs from that don't live there right now to be able to access the extraordinary market. So I don't say that, I just say that in terms of evidentially, you know, as somebody's looked at this now for 3 years in terms of generally parking in the city, it is not the thing that supports active inner city shopping. I think the other thing that I would say is, as somebody who came to this saying I was concerned about the level of dialogue that we had with the community 4 years ago when I was seeking election, is that I actually think that has really, you know, there has been extraordinary levels of dialogue. And I think one of the things I've noticed about this is that, as the Deputy Lord Mayor said, you know, we were going to do a redevelopment that actually, through consultation now, is fundamentally different. And many of the major concerns of those people that we're speaking about it have actually, you know, that voice has been heard, and to significant time and energy to the team, to the staff, to all of that consultation, it is now going to be significantly different. But I want to underline too that I, as somebody who came to this halfway through from the beginning, and I really want to acknowledge, you know, Rob, Joe, the team in this, it was always clear to me that this space was a space for the public that could include the flexibility that's now in 12.3. It's always been, as I understood it, from the very time I was here, a space where it would be able to function in a way that could service lots and lots of different uses and demands. I don't think that has changed. My only concern about 12.3 is that, and I'm really glad it's there, because I think it's always been the intent ever since the first diagrams I went and looked at the first week I got here, because it was such a big issue when I arrived. One thing I say is that what the intent never was, though, is that it would always be 5 days a week car park. And I just want to say, one of the things after looking at this and hearing, there are going to be winners and losers and people that aren't going to like this. And actually, there are lots of my colleagues around this bench who lost the argument that they were putting forward. I would say, as somebody who keeps listening, keeps thinking about it, and what I've learned about transport, if we lose this space in terms of what was planned to cars, we will do the city and its future and the market a great disservice. Now, I think the flexibility is great, but I am not, you know, I am supporting this, and I think it's great because it's clear, but I am not supporting it because I do not think the city needs more car parking. 40% of it is empty every day. What the city needs is open space.
Thanks, Councillor Frances Gillie. Any other speakers to the motion? No? Look, I was just going to reflect back on some of the comments and just to pick up a couple of things. This charter is more than simply canvassing opinions. It's actually a charter that goes out to guide and inform the design brief and the designs that will come back to us. So it's a very important document. It's why it's before us, or to be developed, why it's before us this evening. Just in terms of engagement, I haven't been around as long as everyone else, but from what I've heard, the engagement going into the agreement in 2014 happened and was extensive. The engagement going into the final plans that were put in before the decision in 2018 was extensive. There have been lots of opportunities along the way for people to engage and input. And when the City of Melbourne team goes out and asks for engagement, it's then the responsibility of people to respond. As we see every single time of Friends of QVM, they know that it's their opportunity to put something in, as everybody else does. And so I think the engagement process has been extensive, and it's been done well. And just to note that out of the People's Panel, 14 recommendations, and we're down to one that we're still having some of these issues around. So to say that, or to question the engagement and to question us listening, really, I think is unfair, and something that represents the endeavour that's gone into making sure that this Queen Victoria Market renewal is something that represents and balances the views of so many different groups across our community. And as I said earlier, and as the DLM mentioned, this is about making sure that we are setting our city up well for the future. And so this difficult task of balancing is very much based on that extensive engagement that has gone on over the years. Years and years. And where we find ourselves now, similar to the discussion earlier on Franklin and Queen Streets, is actually delivering on the agreements that have been made several years ago, and something that we're all keen to keep seeing delivered for so many reasons. So I'm going to put this motion to the vote as it appears on the screen, 12.1, 12.2 and 12.3. All those in favour of this motion, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. Thanks for that. Shame, councillors. Oh. Shame Councillors, we will now move to item 6.4, Draft Melbourne, a Great Place to Age Strategic Plan. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? Councillors? No? Then I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion, Councillor Pinder, and a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Watts. Over to you, Councillor Pinder.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. This is a very important report, councillors. It is probably one of the more important strategies that this council will vote on in months to come. The Melbourne A Great Place to Age strategic plan covers off for the next 4 years of how the city will work with our much-loved seniors. From those who've lived in East Melbourne, South Yarra, Carlton, Kensington, St Kilda Road and all of those other areas, people have lived there for decades and given so much back to this city. The plan is actually to challenge ageism and the negative attitudes that surround that and the behaviours as well towards it, and endeavours to change the discourse on ageing and taking it from invisibility and vulnerability to one of pride, strength, positivity, activity, resilience and overall well-being and peace of mind. So it's an important strategy. The team has worked very hard on this plan, and guided by Linda and Alison with input from Olivia, they've explored the gamut of activities from demographic analysis to a policy span and literature review, internal consultation with managers across the board, to extensive involvement with other councils as well. So it's been quite widespread. And it has also been guided by the principles of the World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Cities Framework. The plan will accommodate primary prevention, precinct and place-based approaches, engagement that is fulsome and covers off the widest range of stakeholders, rather than simply relying on Participate Melbourne and face-to-face surveys alone. Above all, as Councillor Watts will attest, it is critical that we conduct engagement that is inclusive as it is broad and all-encompassing of the demography as well as the cultural variations. The key priorities that will be covered are ageism, elder abuse, racism, loneliness, social inclusion, life transitions, dementia and end of life, all very important priorities for this seniors cohort. Among this, we will also have the opportunity of having conversations who've been there from the very beginning. This ageing conversation dates back a long, long time, back to the 90s, and I can recall when I worked with people like John and Coral Knowles, who are an exemplar in providing care, aged care across Australia through their R-Care brand. The state government, of course, will play a huge role in all of this, and alignment with its strategic plan on ageing is very, very important to this to our strategic plan. So I'm actually looking forward to a very big conversation in the form of a stakeholder forum with government, academic institutions, services, peak bodies, and of course the community, those who are the living examples of ageing in place. And very, very important and critical that we get that conversation absolutely right, Linda and Alison. I recommend this plan and support. It is a superb strategic plan, and really have the officers have been very, very thorough. So thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Pinder. Councillor Watts.
Absolutely agree with my colleague. A very important aspect of what we do here in the City of Melbourne. We look up and down Swanson Street and we think, oh, they're all young, but you know, they're not. And we have to tap into the wisdom, the expertise, the experience that our ageing population can deliver. We are in a knowledge city, and I think we have to actually understand that our older constituents are the repositories of the knowledge. So let's make sure that aspect is not forgotten. I think that there may be a tendency in the way in which we canvass their opinion to expect them to participate in an electronic sense or in new ways of connecting with the community, with council. But I'm confident that the officers who are driving this engagement will be understand that and accommodate that. We really have to be a city for all people and across generations, and I fear there's a tendency to dismiss that wisdom which resides or is and with our older people, and they are ready to share if we approach them in the right way. I'm delighted to second this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Deputy Lord Mayor.
I agree with Councillor Pinner and Councillor Watts. I just want to congratulate Ali and the team for what is a quality piece of work, and I think we're really well served by Ali and Linda and our officers, particularly in respect to what I think is such a critical area of intervention that councils can make with other levels of government, of course. But just for me, it's a bit of a personal reflection in that my dad's 74, and he still works for Kids Teaching Kids, and indeed was a co-founder along with myself. And I think probably getting to Councillor Watts's point that, of course, this strategic plan touches on all of the downsides and the issues, and we should be absolutely acutely aware, particularly about suicide risk for males over 85. But equally, I think it touches on how vibrant our society can be. And when we partner that enthusiasm of the younger generation with the knowledge and the experience and the wisdom of our older generation, that's something amazingly powerful. And I think it breeds real respect across the generations. So I think this is a fantastic piece of work and gives due respect to our elders who have done so much for us over such a long period of time and still have so much to offer in terms of a vibrant community.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Other speakers to the motion this evening? Councillor Lilu, thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I think I echo my support with my fellow councillors. It's always with me when we respect, we respect the elderly. It's a great city to be in because we care for those people. We are the most, we were the most livable city in the world. And the key part of that is livability. And for me, having this kind of plan will really help us drive the vision. I do note that one of the programs on ABC that I saw that ranked what is the loneliest which city and the citizens consider themselves the loneliest, and Melbourne was actually was one of those. And I think especially in the elderly community, loneliness, and it's great to see that part of that strategy is about how to communicate with each other, and knowing that a lot of elderly generations now going to be downsizing and moving more towards the city. How do we accommodate for them, especially in terms of transport, in terms of activities and engagement? So this, it's very important. And I think it'll be a fair while before I consider myself at that age. But I hope that when I do come to that age, I will still be living in the city, I will be one of those people who will say I'm very proud to support something like this.
Great. Any other speakers to those? Councillor Rees, thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Can I also commend Councillor Pinder for this great bit of work, and to Alison Duncan and the team. My reflection is also a personal one. One of the most wonderful new policy programs that I've witnessed in recent years actually involves my children's inner city school, which happens to be located next to an aged care facility, an aged care facility that deals with less well-off older folks. And with the help of the primary school and this aged care facility and the University of Melbourne, a program has been developed which involves children at the school spending time each week with people in the aged care facility. And it's a win-win thing because the children love spending time with the older folks because of they're very gentle and they know they have a special gift for bringing out a great side in children. And of course, the older folks love it because of the enthusiasm and the energy of the kids. And just has really opened my eyes to how much more good thinking can be done in this area. And I really hope that this new strategic plan is a platform for us to be making and seeing more of those sort of interventions, and a reminder to us all, as Councillor Watts has said, that those who are aged in our community are actually of a very elegant age, in my view, and are very valued and noticed and respected and loved.
Thank you. Councillor Ali.
Well, I read this with great interest, being a senior citizen and not really knowing how to spell the word retirement, and I still don't know how to spell that. I read with interest that 30% of our people in the city are still in the workforce and 70% of them are still employed in professional and management positions. I also like the idea too that was written in the report, one in five residents volunteer. And I think we have got a beautiful age population in the heart of our city.
Thank you. Any other councillors? I add my support to the motion by saying that the City of Melbourne really is a city that cares, and this is one of our policies and strategies that can show to a certain cohort in our population, to which I am quickly growing into, that we value all people and we value them for the different aspects of what they can bring to our community. And I think policies like this show not just that we value them, but it shows how other people can, and it shows how we can set our city up to show that we can embrace and value everyone. And that's why this is important. So for all of the reasons discussed this evening, I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of this motion, raise your hand, and it's unanimous. So I can declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. We move on to item 6.5, which is Melbourne Knowledge Week 2020 planning phase. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. Then I'm going to call on a councillor to move this motion. Councillor Watts, thank you. And a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Pinder. So over to you, Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. So Melbourne is unique. Our status as a knowledge city is irrefutable globally and nationally. And Knowledge Week is the major outward-facing event in our city around our knowledge economy. And the number of participants grows year on year. And when I say participants, I mean those who wish to partner with us, those in the knowledge sector, and those from the public who actually want to come and be part of it. So people want to participate in Knowledge Week. The savvy set want to connect with each other, and the public at large want to connect with them as well. And so it's really a win-win situation that the City of Melbourne facilitates without actually having to. Certainly we invest, but it's our role as facilitating this mingling of those in the know and those who would like to know. That's the key thing about Knowledge Week. So I really think it's very important to hark back to earlier times where there was this phrase that I'm going to share with you. You're probably bored with it because I've used it in the past, but there was this notion of instructive amusement. Instructive amusement, and I think that's what Knowledge Week does to the City of Melbourne. We are engaging with those at the cutting edge of the knowledge economy, scientific and social and all sorts of which way. It's really important. And what I want to say is how much I appreciate the phenomenal effort and the intelligence and the energy and the ingenuity, I would say, of those officers who've been engaged with this Knowledge Week since its inception. This is a very important element in what we deliver to our constituents, our professional constituents, as well as those who are just plain ratepayers. So this is a very important shift for the City of Melbourne. It's becoming a more and more major event, and this plan that's outlined tonight is exciting indeed to me, and I hope my colleagues share that, and I'm confident that in 2020 it's going to be bigger and better than ever.
Thank you. Councillor Pinder.
Only to say, Lord Mayor, that this is terrific that it will soon be under Katrina McKenzie's portfolio, I guess. Because it's, I remember the early days, Councillor Watts, when you were really struggling to get budget for Knowledge Week, and look where we are now. It's been a great, great success, and Katrina and team will only take it to higher and greater places. So well done to you too.
Any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Rowley?
Look, I agree with what Councillor Pender has just said. When Councillor Watts first put this forward many years ago, I didn't think that we would ever be saying to ourselves in 2020 that this has grown to the extent that it is a major event, and how well done you have been able to get it there. So thank you, Councillor Watts.
I'd like to acknowledge the fact that Knowledge Week has got to the point where the depth and breadth and high quality nature of the content is now being matched with our expertise in major events. So to Michelle Fitzgerald for steering together with Councillor Watts this program to its current status, to think that Knowledge Week now has status effectively as one of our premium major events at the City of Melbourne is superb. And it showcases us as a knowledge city, which is what we want. It showcases our local talent. It stretches and challenges us and our thinking and that of the community, which is fantastic. And it's thoroughly engaging. And in that way, it's double whammy exponential value to this organisation and to the community and to our position globally as well. So congratulations to everyone involved. And for all of those reasons, I'm going to be very happy to support this motion this evening as well. Any other speakers? All those in favour? And it's unanimous. I'm declaring the motion carried are the right words for that. This brings us to item 6.6, 2020 City of Melbourne Business Mission China and Japan. The councillors, would you like a presentation on this item? No. Then I'm going to move the motion as it appears on the screen. And I'm looking for somebody to second the motion, please. Deputy Lord Mayor, thank you. Yes, sorry, Kevin. I've got to be quick tonight. I'm not thinking about where it all sits properly. I'm looking at hands, so thank you. Look, what I want to note is obviously at our last meeting, we approved the mission to China, Japan next year. We did go through the details then, but just to note that it's an ambitious and appropriate program reflecting the 40 years and the longest city relationship between China and Australia, reflecting 20 years of our investment of having a team in Tianjin, which is just incredible. And also, of course, the 41 years of having a relationship with Osaka in Japan. It's appropriately designed to make sure that we cover an extensive program, both in terms of sectors and physical places that we visit, and noting, as we did last time, that there are a number of cities being visited, which is, I think, relevant to the motion tonight, which is that we have identified, as we said we would in the last relevant motion, that council would nominate the councillors who will accompany the Lord Mayor in this 2020 mission. The streams that have been identified are extensive, as I said, but what's important and proposed by management is that those streams will have a relevant councillor leading those streams of work. Why is that important? And certainly I know this from my time as Agent General for Victoria, is that having government representatives accompanying a business mission not only opens doors, but comes with a sense of support and endorsement, which can propel and accelerate and really create that substance that means that there are more opportunities for those businesses who are on the mission. And the fact that
We will have four councillors, I think, will also be a sign of good confidence to the businesses who come with us that they will have appropriate support and representation from the City of Melbourne when they're looking at the investment they are also making in joining this business mission, which will have clear commercial outcomes as part of it. I'm sure we'll have clear commercial deliverables, and at the same time we're able to, together with business, celebrate those major milestones in our relationships in China and also Japan, but particularly China in this case. For those reasons, I am happy to support this this motion this evening, and I'm looking to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. I think you've well covered it. Obviously, it's come to us before in terms of the mission itself. This is just nominating the councillors, so I'll just briefly say thank you to the councillors for representing us.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Would anybody else like to speak to this motion? No, then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we can declare that motion carried. Thank you. That brings us to item 6.7, which is funding support request December 2019. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No? Then I'm going to ask for a mover to the motion. Councillor Pinder, and a seconder to the motion. Deputy Lord Mayor. Okay, so over to you, Councillor Pinder.
Just very quickly, Lord Mayor, obviously one of those is the Australia-China Business Council and for International Women's Day, which is a great and a very cost-effective way of providing support, but also having networks. But the 10 Women Major Charity event, the proceeds go towards the Lighthouse Foundation, and you couldn't find a better charity than that to support. So all in all, a good good.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Nothing to add, Lord Mayor.
Thank you. I'm glad you seconded then. Are there any other speakers to the motion? I see, I get it. No other speakers. Okay, well, I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of this motion, are all hands in the air? Good. And then it's unanimously declared carried motion. Thank you. That brings us to the point where we can say we are concluding the reports from management to be considered in open session this evening. It's been a very productive and worthwhile evening of debate and discussion. Thank you to everyone. There are four items of general business for consideration in open session, and we're moving to these now. The first one is item 7.1, participation in meeting with Bloomberg Philanthropies, Lord Mayor Sally Capp, New York, USA, October 2019. I am going to move that motion, and a seconder is Deputy Lord Mayor, who's busy tonight. Thank you. I'm reporting back on the fact that at no cost to council at all, I was in New York and took the opportunity to meet with representatives of Bloomberg Philanthropies, particularly given the timing around the resolution that we'd just made in relation to Bourke Street Mall and their ongoing interest globally around the impacts of smoking on health. And to be able to inform them, given their support and participation in helping fund marketing of some of our efforts around smoke-free areas in the city. We were also able to get, and I was also able to get an update on some of their other programs that might be relevant to us, and set up some ongoing dialogue and deliverables for our team. That is important because Bloomberg Philanthropies is one of the organisations with the biggest budgets to be able to support initiatives that are important for communities but don't always find it easy to find funding, and that's really important. So for all those reasons, I'm glad I went to that meeting in between my personal visit. It was very worthwhile. And I'm happy to support this or propose this motion. Over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Thanks.
Thanks, Lord Mayor, and thanks for representing us. And this continues a long and fruitful relationship that we've had with Bloomberg and Bloomberg Philanthropies, which goes way back to our founding membership of C40. So excellent to continue this relationship.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. We've got Councillor Lelou.
Just very briefly as well, and thank you for representing us. And note that, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, he could be potentially future president-elect. And the opportunity to be able to work with Bloomberg Philanthropy and an opportunity to work with something like that would be very important to Melbourne. Philanthropy is something that we are very interested in, I think, and given that new role that we've created here where we purely focus on philanthropy in terms of in government, I think we'll do wonders. And this is one of the, and Bloomberg Philanthropy in New York has been done particularly well. So looking forward to more collaboration like this.
Thank you, Councillor Lelou. I thought you were going to say future Lord Mayor of Melbourne for a minute there, something that you knew that we didn't know, but future president, yes, I've heard that mooted. Okay, any other speakers? We're going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of accepting this travel report, thank you, that's unanimous. We'll declare that motion carried. That brings us to item 7.3, noting that 7.2 was withdrawn. 7.3 is participation in ICLEI meetings, Resilient Cities Congress, Bonn, Germany, and Echo City World Summit, Vancouver, Canada, Councillor Cathy Oak, 2019. Anybody like a presentation on this item? No? I'm going to move the motion. I'm looking for a seconder to this motion. Councillor Francis Gillie, thank you. In moving the motion, I just wanted to note a couple of things. Again, in this circumstance, Councillor Oak was travelling overseas in a private capacity in June, made a side trip to Bonn, Germany for a series of ICLEI meetings at the cost of ICLEI and herself personally, so no cost to council. She participated in the ICLEI meetings and the Parallel Resilient Cities Congress, and that allowed her to fulfil her duties as President of the Board and Vice President of the Global Executive Committee of ICLEI, roles that at the City of Melbourne reflect her interests and her work here and her dedication and expertise, and roles that we've proudly endorsed previously in terms of her participation. Also, she was at the Echo City World Summit Vancouver, again at no cost to council, and was able to maintain Melbourne's reputation as a global city leader on sustainability. For all those reasons, I'm happy to propose this motion. Over to you, Councillor Francis Gillie.
Only to thank Councillor Oak for her extraordinary commitment to representing the city globally, and often at no cost to this city, and often at a large cost to herself and time and commitment. So I'm really grateful to that, and I commend the report.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gillie. Any other speakers to this motion? I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? It's passed unanimously, so we declare that motion carried. Councillors, item 7.4, participation in Career Foundation Program for Distinguished Guest, Deputy Lord Mayor, Aaron Wood, South Korea, September 2019. Would anybody like a presentation on this item? Good, then I'm looking at Deputy Lord Mayor, who's going to propose the motion, and Councillor Francis Gillie has already got his hand up for seconding it, so over to you, Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd just like to make the point that I didn't decide on the title of Distinguished Guest, so that was the name of the program. But excellent to be recommended by the Consul General to participate in this, fully funded by the Career Foundation. They've been doing this over a very long period, so participation with other mayors, deputy mayors and government officials. And I think probably I won't go through the whole program. There was an extensive program covering waste, energy, all sorts of key issues, transport, city mobility, all the sorts of issues that we're grappling with. But probably one of the big outcomes, the economic outcomes, was supporting the state government and the commissioner and our ambassador in securing the flight of Asiana Airlines direct from Seoul to Melbourne. And also just like to acknowledge our CEO, Justin Haney, for his work. So we had subsequent meetings with Melbourne Airport and with ministers, and the good news is that flight is occurring. and what we know in terms of economic development, that a direct flight opens up huge economic development in whichever city that you can secure that for. So that was an excellent outcome of the trip.
Great. To you, Councillor Francis-Kelly.
Once again, just to thank the Deputy Lord Mayor for his commitment to the city, his willingness to travel. He, like Councillor Oak, leaves a young family at home. I know what that means and what that feels like. Your skill at representing us, particularly on issues that place us as an economic force in the world, are really well received, and we're grateful to those. Thank you. And I also commend the report.
Good. Any other speakers? Thank you, Councillor Riley.
Thank you, DLM, for this great report. But it is lacking in the photo albums.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Rees.
Look, I was really disappointed that we didn't get a presentation tonight, but look, I hope to take up the conversation with the Deputy Lord Mayor after this evening's council meeting. I'm very happy to vote in favour of this one.
Councillors, I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous. We declare the motion carried. Thank you. So this brings us to item 7.5, which is notice of motion, Councillor Rees, City of Melbourne support for Can't Do Tomorrow. And Councillor Rees is moving the motion. Councillor Leppett is seconding the motion. Oh, sorry, you've got a question, Councillor Pender.
May I ask a question of officers, please? I just need, who's here, Katrina? Did the festival organisers apply for funding through one of our grants programs? And if so, why wasn't funding given?
Michelle, I can see you're here. Are you able to help with that, please?
Yes. Yes, certainly the organisation has applied for funding to the annual grant program. However, what they were proposing was to work most recently with the public art program, so that they're going to activate a body of work with artists quite differently in a fairly unused space in Kensington, very big. It's going to engage a very disparate group of stencil and street artists. So that wasn't the original proposal to council in the funding program.
So sorry, I'm confused. So they did apply for funding?
Yes, they did.
And
they weren't
amended?
Successful, Councillor. However, a new iteration, a new idea was put to Council around working with the public art team and what they could do about stencil art and art around this fairly unused space in Kensington.
And so is that usual for us to actually encourage that repeated kind
Well, it does happen occasionally where ideas come up to the public art program. Certainly they have a mandate to do that, to develop work with people in different spheres, and they have a little bit more flexibility than the funding round itself, which has got all sorts of criterium, etc.
Councillor Rees, to you to speak.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. I'm very happy to speak in favour of the motion on the screen. As a young person growing up in the outer suburbs, outskirts of Melbourne in the 1980s, I spent a lot of time riding the city's trains and came to appreciate what was then an emerging art form in our city. Now some 20-30, scares me to say that, years later, Melbourne is actually recognised internationally as one of the world's leading urban art, street art cities, so much so that we now have Melbourne's artists like Roan being hung in the National Gallery of Victoria, other leading Melbourne street artists being exhibited all around the world. One of the most popular exhibitions that will appear anywhere in Australia this year is the CAUSE exhibition, currently at the National Gallery of Victoria. Of course, CAUSE is a Brooklyn or New York street artist who is now one of the, how can I say this, biggest selling artists in the world. So this is a scene that has matured very significantly over the years, And I'm absolutely delighted and proud that Melbourne sits at the cutting edge and at the centre of this. Unfortunately, Melbourne has really never taken advantage of that asset, and it is an asset that we have that body of artists here and have made the most of it. And so this Can't Do Tomorrow Festival, I really think, is going to take this thing that Melbourne's got and not only allow tens of thousands of Melburnians to enjoy it, but also showcase that to the world. So the City of Melbourne's support for this inaugural festival, this is the first time it's ever been done, where if you like, funding a start-up festival, something which I would say this town hall has a very long and proud track record of getting in on the ground level with a new festival and then being delighted as we see it grow. But there we are, we're supporting a start-up festival. But we're also going to be supporting a free community workshops program, which will allow Melburnians to engage with the artists and with the art form. I think that'll have a positive spin-off for the city in leading to an appreciation of street art and a despising of tagging and the people who are essentially anti-artists in this domain. Also, the documentation of the festival through photography, video and publications is something that the City of Melbourne can support. And it's my prediction that the Can't Do Tomorrow Festival and the art that will be displayed there will be some of the most viewed images, one of the most viewed festivals anywhere in the world in 2020, and will bring unprecedented numbers of eyeballs and attention to Melbourne. It will be the most Instagrammable thing that happens in this city in 2020. Yep, it is the first time this has ever been done. There is a little bit of risk involved, but it's a great thing for us to get behind. And, I really do think it'll be one of the artistic highlights for Melbourne in 2020.
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Of course, I agree as the seconder. It's been a pleasure to work on this with Councillor Rees. Councillor Pinder's quite right to scrutinise what is a very unusual proposal to be considered in an unusual way. I just wanted to point out, though, that it's not a recommendation from management. In fact, as a notice of motion, by definition, it's not a recommendation from management. It is here for unusual reasons, which I'm more than happy to promote. The fact that this organisation put a different set of proposals to us previously and were knocked back is known, as I advised councillors in writing and verbally last week. But this is an evolved proposal that in and of itself is not enough to warrant support. There are unique reasons here why I'm doing something that I very, very rarely do, and that is to work with councillors to bring a proposal to council to progress a particular idea. One of the most difficult parts of my role as chair of the Arts and Culture and Heritage Portfolio is the weekly instances of correspondence I have to write to festivals saying, thank you for your unsolicited proposal for us to give you money, no. And only in very, very rare circumstances should we consider an out-of-the-box solution. Another one of those was Photo 2020, also an inaugural festival, which was not well advanced at the point of application of through the grants program, but which we made a strategic and political decision to support because it was an inaugural festival doing something that absolutely no one else was doing. This falls into that category as well. It is something that blew Councillor Rees and I away when we understood what the proposal was, which was very, very different to the proposal that was progressed through the grants program. And personally, what I'm most excited about is the potential for this organisation to break through the politics of the street art world in ways that no one has been able to do for a couple of decades. There have been attempts after attempts after attempts to stage marketplace of urban art and get all the different studios that work in this space together, and they've all failed. This is different. This has the support of almost all of the Melbourne-based studios in a way that is completely unheard of for a couple of decades. And I think that there's a opportunity there that we need to pursue. The proposal is one that won't automatically just be supported. This isn't just a cash grant. I'm requesting that we treat this like any other part of the Strategic Partnership Fund, which is wrapping up in June 2020, given the new creative funding framework, and that is to put appropriate rigour and conditions around the funding to ensure that what is promised to be delivered is delivered, and to ensure that funding is going to the right space. And that is identified in part two of the motion, which is around the proposal that they've put forward about the free community workshops, particularly school kids as well, which is going to teach some wonderful, unique and good practices as well and good behaviours, and the documentation of the festival. And I think the city can even broker a licence arrangement through that. This is something that we haven't done before, so the world is our oyster. Finally, this is part of our City of Melbourne that is under-activated at the moment. This is in the Macaulay Urban Renewal Precinct, where we have earmarked for new and expanded creative uses and public activation. This fits that mark entirely. I'll just close by saying, under no circumstances should this festival be entitled to come back next year for an ad hoc political decision. We need to assess its merits after the first iteration. What this is a final utilisation of the Strategic Partnerships Fund to make a strategic and once-off decision to support a festival that has absolutely extraordinary potential. And I know that Councillor Rees and I, we wouldn't be bringing it to this council for a once-off discretionary consideration if that weren't the case. So I recommend it highly to all colleagues.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. To Councillor Watts next.
So despite its unorthodox genesis, I'm going to be supporting this. And despite its very strange title, Can't Do Tomorrow, I think there's something in that that I don't get, but it doesn't matter because no doubt I will. I think it's a terrific initiative, and I'm very hopeful also that it will make, will educate the constituents of Melbourne around good street art. In fact, that's what I'm a little bit concerned that the free community workshops, I don't envisage that they will be simply how to do it. I hope that there's perhaps a little more intellectual element to this and the sort of social criticism that might come into this. The possibility is there. I hope that the organisers grasp that possibility. And the other, well, there are two other reasons I like it. That it is inaugural, for a start, great. And finally, that it is in a place in our city which needs activating greatly. So altogether, I think it's worth the risk that's been very clearly outlined by my colleagues.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Lillu.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. And I also would love to support this. I think, you know, as Deputy Chair of the Arts, I want to thank Councillor Rees and Councillor Leppett for their for putting up this motion. And I think it's to getting where we are today. It's an amazing job. I think so. Three things for me was to support this was because the breakthrough in terms of the politics. I think if people are willing to forget politics and then come together, then I think there is something for us to be able to show good faith in as well. The other part is, you know, when the currently the butchering of the creative industry and the arts at the federal level, it's great that City of Melbourne is taking a lead in the creative realm. And I will be saying to our colleagues in the federal parliament about, you know, using art as an industry that we can actually promote rather than putting it aside into infrastructure and God knows what else. Final point is around, I think, you know, we have a lot of issues with graffiti, and I think these are great ways which we can actually promote and teach and actually show that, you know, it's not all about graffiti. So if you actually show that you do street arts well, you don't actually have to tag or graffiti. You know, you can actually do something more creative, and also something that is appreciated. Because as we all know, with the graffitis, we just get rid of it. But with the street arts, people appreciate it, and I think that is what people really want. So with those things, love to support this, and looking forward to see how this would go.
Thanks, Councillor Liu. Anybody else like to speak to the motion? Councillor Pinder.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I fully agree with Councillor Watt's comments earlier. My only concern is that we have competing demands for funds, and we've got $15,000 coming out of a discretionary fund, and one might say, well, come May, June 2020, we will still have money left over. However, I would have thought that available funding could be used, better used, to engage and activate other areas of need within the municipality. So that's my only reservation. I think that perhaps $15,000 to $20,000 support would have suited me better. But I do concur with Councillor Watts that this is terrific, even though I don't understand the headline either.
Any other speakers to the motion? I'm putting it to the vote. All those in favour, hands in your air, in the air, and it's unanimous. So I declare the motion carried. Okay, councillors, this concludes the items of general business to be considered in open session. Councillors, are there any items of urgent business that you propose this evening? Then I'm calling on a councillor to move the motion displayed on the screen to close the meeting to the public to consider items of confidential business. Moved by DLM, seconded by Councillor Riley. Putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour, put up your hand. All those in favour, and it's unanimous, so I declare it carried. Thanks to Chris Thrum and to all of our dedicated members of the public who come so regularly to these meetings. I'm declaring the meeting closed at 7:35 p.m.